everybody. I can't believe we made it this far. We are now on episode 4 of This Is Sus. For this episode, I have both a very exciting guest and a very exciting show. The show is something that I got a lot of recommendations for. A lot of fans of the This Is Sus universe demanded that we watch this. And I thought, why not bring on one of the foremost experts in TV and film to discuss this show, The Slap, NBC's The Slap, Zachary Quinto's The Slap, other than Will Menaker.
Hello, pleased to be here.
Will, I have my notes here. I have everything written down about my thoughts about The Slap. But before we go in, what did you think about it?
My review of NBC's The Slap, it slaps. No, I was. This is a good one. I'm certainly glad you watched it because it is a show about your two favorite groups of people.
Yes,
New Yorkers and Greeks
and Gen X Greeks.
Yeah, this show made me like a Turkish nationalist.
Yeah, me too. There was a lot of stuff about the sickness of the Greek and how they need the blade of the Kirk to keep them in line. We might as well just jump in. All right, so. Show opens with Hector, Peter Sarsgaard. He works as like some generic commissioner in New York. We presume.
It's Hector. It's like each episode is about a different family member, and it sort of like centers on them, and sort of a sly nod to the great Stanley Kubrick's Barry Lyndon. Each episode also features sort of like an omniscient voiceover narrator.
Yes,
I believe is Bryan Cranston. And it sort of begins like, you know, Hector began every day like he usually does, fantasizing about fucking the teenage babysitter who works for his wife.
Yeah, we will get into that.
He then went to his job at the New York City Department of Bodega Regulation and Neighborhood Gentrification.
Yeah. Well, OK, so he's at work. He turns 40. He has a 40th birthday party at work at like. Yeah, the Department of Bodega Dust. And he makes some weird joke about how they're going to make New York the shining city on the hill that none of them can afford to live in, which is like...
I don't think that was a joke. I think that was literally his job.
Yeah, no, he's literally just giving tax breaks to Jared Kushner to make the city worse. Okay, so after his party, after they give him... You know, whatever kind
of those office birthday cake, like, you know, celebrations where sir, the mayor's on the phone. And he's like, your honor. Hi. Would you like to have some of my birthday cake? And then he's like, "Ooh, you won't be giving me that promotion. All right. Well, fair enough. Bye bye.
Yeah. He passes him up. But because Hector's a cuck, he's like, I'm honored that you even thought of my face for even a second. They're really hammering it in that Hector is a huge, huge cuck.
Hector, just watching this 40 minutes of television was like a really exquisite glimpse into just like a life of kind of quiet desperation and personal hell that comes with being a meek Greek man.
Yeah, the Greek the Greek is like, they're sort of similar to like a hobbit or a dwarf in fantasy. They're born to serve. That's what we learn from the show. But some Greeks, okay, there's a character who's Greek who's very alpha, and I think it's implied. I'll get into my theory about him when we get to him.
He would defy the Turk.
Well, I have a theory. When we get to this character, I have a theory about him.
Okay. Let's take it one at a time as the show unfolds.
Yeah. In traditional Greek style, Hector goes home and lies to his wife and is like, yeah, actually, they're thinking about my promotion. They didn't just like pass me up because I'm the office cock.
His wife is played by,
Fandy Newton.
Fandy Newton, yeah. And I like he goes home and his kids obviously. Have awful. No respect for him.
They hate
no
him.
No respect for him. They hate him. They won't stop playing. They're looking at tablets, and he's like, you know, can't get them to come to dinner. His wife is, you know, sort of a bit of a shrew. You know, like he knows the lash of the rolling pin, Hector, and you know, like his escape from this is going to his study and listening to jazz records on vinyl.
Yes.
Fantasizing about fucking a teenager.
Yeah, his fantasy is he imagines having sex with Connie, who's a babysitter who works at his wife's clinic also. And it's a weird fantasy because they don't, like, it's just the prelude to sex where she's like, we shouldn't do this. So even in Hector's fantasy, he's forbidden from doing things and getting yelled at, kind of.
In his ultimate private alone time fantasy, he's thinking about telling a woman, we shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. So he wakes up from his fantasy. Like, I guess part of that fantasy is he's finally telling someone what to do, but he wakes up from there. We find out, yeah, his wife never fucks him.
He wakes up because his kid is like, Dad, I flushed all your computer files down the toilet.
Dad, our Montessori school needs a new yarn ball to play non-competitive kickball with. So yeah, his kids are annoying. We find out that his wife, Aisha, Fandy Newton, never fucks him, and she cucked him by throwing out his cigarettes, which is a traditional part of Greek food, smoking. So that's really sad. Hector wants to cancel his upcoming birthday party, and he wants to bang his wife. He wants to take her to a hotel. She's like, no, we invited 20 people. Also, can you go to the wife clinic to get me some wife tech? And he's like, of course he says yes. Of course he says yes.
No, it's the other thing is like, okay, so like they're both stressed out about the party, and I don't know, like, dude, if you're turning 40 and having a birthday party with 20 people, it's like, come on, by 40 you should have like 3 people that you like hanging out with. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
No, you should have picked who you actually like being with.
So I mean, honestly, relatable. Like, I would not want to be having like this birthday party either. And also, crucially, his two big fat Greek parents are coming as well, and Aisha is like, Hector, you better make sure your parents don't bring, like, you know, all their Greek food. Like, you know, we have lots of food. And he's like, okay, all right, I'll try to talk to them, but you know how they are. You know these Greeks. You know,
I've never stood up to anyone in my life. Yeah. Hector, your parents bring 50 birds every time. Birds are going to peck out our kids' eyeballs.
Hector, please tell your dad to stop bringing those parrots around the house.
So he's driving to the wife clinic, and he has a flashback to, I think, everyone who wrote the show's fantasy, showing Miles Davis to some, like, how old is Connie supposed to be? Like 19 or even younger?
No, younger, too young to have a cigarette. She's supposed to be like 16 or 16 or 17.
So Hector is like a bashful pedophile. And he actually, like, kissed Connie in the car after showing her Miles Davis, which is insane. This is fucking insane. It's pretty swag. So he gets to the wife's
store.
It's
like, you know what it reminded me of? Like, Hector's character really reminded me of, like, a Park Slope version of Kevin Spacey's character in American Beauty.
Yeah.
Because A, he's also a pedophile.
Yes.
B... But, like, similar to Spacey's character in American Beauty, it's like, and like the director wanted to show, like, ooh, like, what is the secret inner fantasy life of like a middle-aged
suburban cuck, yeah.
A middle-aged cucked suburban man thinking about fucking his teenage daughter's friend. And they portray that by, like, she's on just a bed of roses and petals are falling on you.
Which is like, I mean, Kevin,
no man
Kevin
has ever thought.
Yeah,
of
Kevin
that.
Spacey didn't have to come out as gay after that. what's your most darkest fantasy? All right, so there's a bed, California king, surrounded by roses, fresh roses. What, homie?
There's just a mild scent of sandalwood in the air.
That's like. In any time I fantasize about fucking someone, it's never like, I don't really think about the bed. I mean, if anything, I think about the period of my life where I had a floor mattress. It was kind of hot. So Hector goes to his wife's clinic and he's like, have you seen any of the wife technology my wife needs? Do you have the wife pills? And he runs into Connie there. And he lent her a book about, you know, city architecture.
It's not mentioned, but I think I'm pretty positive that they're referencing Jane Jacobs.
Yeah. That's part of the 40-year-old guy PUA manual, lending a 16-year-old a book. He invites her to his birthday party,
and also, like, there's like the omniscient narrator. like states like, you know, Hector made a deal with himself. If the light would turn red, he would stop and not go to the clinic and think about giving a girl a book and inviting her to his birthday party. And then he like just sort of like it turns red and he still goes. So like even he can't even defy his own thoughts, really. Like, or no, he does, but like that's his little victory in life.
Yeah, yeah. So she's excited to go. She says that the clinic closes.
I would love to spend my Saturday at like my 40-year-old's like
co-worker's
husband's birthday party.
Yeah, with a bunch of 40-year-olds who hate each other. But she's very excited to go. She mentions that the clinic closes at 2 today, which is actually very realistic to how things in New York operate. The hours of like any doctor's office in New York are about, I'd say, like 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. So all Hector and Aisha's boring, awful middle-aged friends and Hector's parents are in Aisha's kitchen, and they're doing like the traditional upper middle class Gen Xer / boomer thing of drinking shitty cocktails and making annoyed eyes at each other.
Yep, there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, there's they're complaining about how their kids can't get into like the Little St. James pilot program. Just being insufferable to each other. The kids are being insufferable. I had a lot of flashbacks to my childhood here of just like being at a dinner party at my parents and everyone just looking at each other annoyed and me being annoying. But I did so like...
There's the kids and the adults and like there's like the siblings. I didn't quite fully suss out like how everyone was related to each other, but like there is, I guess his sister, played by Melissa George,
yes,
who has the son Hugo,
the most annoying son, the alpha irritating son.
She has a like you know neuroatypical boy named Hugo who will be, you know, like the kind of linchpin of the, you know, title of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then her husband is the guy who's sort of like the fish face guy from the newsroom, who tells the pilots that we killed Osama bin Laden on a commercial flight.
Yes, very happy to see him
again.
It's
that guy. Very, yeah, good to see that guy again.
He's being typecast as annoying, guys.
Yeah. Then there is... Oh God, who else shows up? Okay, so his parents show up, and then his dad is played by Brian Cox, Logan Roy, playing a Greek man. And then if his mom, of course, has brought... like no fewer than like 30 Tupperware containers of like lamb. And fucking them, like food, like
lamb is the only food that the Greek eats because it's the only creature they can outsmart. No offense.
And also, Felix, did you catch this line? You like she thinks, and she comes like the my big fat Greek mom comes, and she is immediately she does the thing where like it's she's in the household of like her son and his wife. Like, his wife should be, like, the head of her household.
Yeah, that's but cucking a woman.
She immediately doms Aisha in, like, every way imaginable and just begins, like, ordering people around and just treating it like she is the master of the house.
Well, that is, like, okay, so if cucking for, like, there are a lot of things men can do to cuck each other. That's something that, like, women can do to cuck each other. And this has also never happened to my mom. My mom is the alpha of her kitchen and always has
like
been.
She would never let some pushy old broad come in there and demand like a different kind of olive oil like or something.
If a Greek came into my mom's kitchen and was like, oh, where's the lemons? My mom would exercise castle doctrine. The alpha of her kitchen, so I couldn't really relate to that part of the scene. I never saw that happen to my mom growing up. She was the queen.
That's good.
Of the
that's good. That's why. Yeah. That's why you turned out strong.
Yeah. Exactly.
Strong role models.
My mom
know?
Was always like the alpha. Like she's a sort of the John Wayne type. Strong but silent.
You know, it's just like someone who comes into like your kitchen. Like you've prepared all the food for this birthday party that you planned. And then this annoying old bat shows up.
Yes.
Yeah, like with a catering service worth of shit. And I don't know if you caught this. She originally comes in. She's like, I brought the coffee cake for you. And she goes, the Jews are so much better at desserts than us Greeks.
Okay, that part's insane. Because that means she got, like, she went to South Williamsburg and got some shitty kosher coffee cake. Like, she just has no taste. Like, I couldn't catch if that was like a kosher bakery or just like a Jewish person owned a bakery. There are a lot of great bakeries owned by Jewish people because oftentimes our dads are lawyers or Goldman Sachs guys and we just get really into high tech baking. But I don't think it was that. I don't think she would be hip enough to go to one of those places. So it's presumably a kosher bakery. And also kosher, there's some amazing Greek desserts. So I really didn't appreciate her bad-mouthing her own culture like that. Aisha's really pissed off about how much food Hector's annoying parents brought. Our hero shows up, though, at this point. Our hero, yes. Zachary yes. Quinto, shows
yes.
up.
He's the hero of the show is Cousin Harry, played by, you know, Mr. Spock himself, Zachary
the King.
Quinto.
He's driving...
He pulls up in like a fucking
100 stack
just
Range
like 100K Range Rover.
Yes.
And then he's just like, yeah, we're in this shithole neighborhood in Brooklyn. Do I park this thing so it won't get broken into by a fucking, you know, Puerto Rican or something? And then it should be like they're in Park Slope or Fort Greene. They live in like.
Yeah, they're never. I'm the only
brownstonest, like nicest part of Brooklyn that exists.
I'm literally the only man to get robbed in a neighborhood like Brooklyn in like 40 years. I'm the only
exactly.
one who's ever happened to.
It's like him and his wasp wife.
Who's like wearing, by the way, every woman is wearing like the 40-year-old like yuppie wife uniform of like a dress and like a cardigan. And his wife is wearing a fucking cocktail dress. She's
yes.
absolute fire.
Yeah. So like, yeah, they pull up in the Wraith and like, you know, like electronic doors, like the suicide doors just whirr, skirt, like the, you know, and he's just like, he's big dicking it. Cousin Harry. And then like
the
he has this some line who's just like, oh, like, there's something like, what do you, he's like, Hector's like, oh, you getting ready to invade Iraq with this thing? And he was like, yeah, well, we should. So,
yeah. And this like, is like in 2003, he's like, we need to invade Iraq again. Like, I don't agree.
Yeah.
I don't agree with Harry's politics, but I appreciate that he's like, you know, he's everyone in that room is like, I don't know. I mean, I like Beto. I also like Kamala, and he's like, no, we need to invade Iraq, install Jared Kushner as God King of the Middle East. I appreciate that he's about it, you know?
So, like, Harry is about that paper. It's clear that Hector's parents like Harry, their nephew, more than him.
So much
so
more.
It's just like, yeah, like, he's got his wasp wife and, like strong boy. He's got a strong boy with him.
Yeah, his kid is the alpha of the... Like, all the kids that are not Zachary Quinto's kids there, they're all just like,
I want another iPad. This iPad's only 60 hertz. I want to watch The Marriage Story on 120 frames a second. Like, they're all breastfed. They're all pussies.
Okay, well, we got to talk about that.
Zachary Quinto's kid is like... a traditional bully. It rocks.
Okay, so then I don't quite get what the relation was, but Uma Thurman shows up with
Hector's childhood friend.
Okay, so Hector's friend, played by Uma Thurman, shows up with like Penn Badgley, who's like, she's bringing her boy toy to her best friend's 40th birthday party. And, like, Penn Badgley is basically playing himself. He's, like, a young, like, hot, like, kind of, like TV actor. But
yeah.
He's, like, also, like probably, I don't know, 20 years younger than Uma Thurman. So she's a bit on the prowl, you know?
That kid's living the dream. Good for him.
Yeah.
The three good characters, like Uma Thurman, the 20-year-old boy she's fucking, and Zachary Quinto. Yeah, Zachary Quinto.
Immediately. Harry immediately gets into it with like the sister's husband, who's like a painter. The guy played the newsroom guy.
I love this.
They start arguing about politics and shit.
Well, they argue about art, and Harry is totally right during this argument. So before this happens, by the way, he yells at Hugo for bumping into him, Montessori style. That was awesome. Everyone's more annoyed at each other now. But
like,
Zachary Quinto, yeah, Hugo is
he's one of these nightmare like crotch spawn. He's got long hair. It's like, yeah, you know, his parents like just no discipline. It's just like a feral child who is not really a bully, but like uses his own I don't know, ability to throw a tantrum and be like a selfish little prick to bully adults.
Yeah,
who let him do it.
That's, yeah, but yeah, that is how you raise a nightmare adult, just letting them do whatever and never get a haircut. Like, I don't even think it's ever implied that he's like neurotypical. He's just like fucking annoying and his parents suck. His parents are fucking cucks.
What I liked about this pilot episode is that as soon as they introduce the character of Hugo, and if you're like vaguely aware of what the show's about, you're like, oh, I see what's coming. And they like, they telegraph it by like having Hugo do like, an escalating series of obnoxious, awful behaviors that are like that are just, it's just getting my blood up, and I'm like, ooh, I can see what's coming. Like, my favorite scene in this episode is that, like, during the party, Hugo finds his way into Hector's jazz vinyl and just like throws them on the floor.
Yeah,
just because he wants to, and he's like, he's just picking up his like Miles Davis records and like scratching them, smacking them against the coffee table. And then, you know, Hector sees it and he like allows himself to express as much anger as he possibly can, which is basically like, Hector, no.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Hector is told no to do that, he just goes,
nah. Yeah, he just immediately.
And then he should be stressed that Hector is about 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
Like kindergarten age.
Way too old to be doing this.
Okay. So then his mom picks him up, cradles him, just flops down in a chair, whops out her tit, and the kid just starts like,
yeah,
just having a drink.
He's doing a cake stand on Melissa George's plate. basically, I do want to rewind. Zachary Kitto's argument with the newsroom guy was incredible. Zachary Kitto's point is like, well, I don't know how good any art is, so I'm just gonna judge it based on how much it costs, like cars. And it's like, he's right, art sucks. He's totally right. Like, can you imagine the bird brain paintings that the newsroom character probably paints? It's probably like a dollar that casts a shadow over a street that poor people crawl out of.
Or it's not even like that. It's not even that like literal. It's just like, I call this like, you know, an experiment in color or something.
Yeah. And he has one of those things where like it just all black paint and then a few specks of white. And he's like, this is about how liminal spaces, create an energy. And like, people are like, his art's so shitty that I bet billionaires don't even use it to launder their pedophile money. Like, it just, no one buys it. And Sir Zachary Kitto's right, you should just buy one of his exotic cars instead. Zachary Kitto is an alpha car dealer, by the way, that's his job. But Connie shows up and she brought a board game for Henry's book. Did I catch this right?
No. She says, I got you this present at Bergen Street Comics.
Oh,
I remember was a real, this is like lots of Brooklyn details.
This is a show for Brooklynites.
Yeah, this is real Brooklyn hours here. And she buys them like, it's a big, it's like a Chris Ware, like sort of graphic novel about buildings and cities. And it's like, you know, if you're not familiar with Chris Ware, he's like, it's comic books for people who read The New Yorker, you know?
That sucks.
Yeah,
that's so.
And then she had like, what was the inscription on the note that she gave him?
So when they kissed in the car, they were listening to some Miles Davis song, and Hector went, you know, it's so soft. I feel like it'll never end. And Connie goes, I hope it never ends. And then they kiss. So the note alludes to that song, like it's like some quote from Miles Davis. Connie also brought her imbecile friend, who I thought was supposed to be a boyfriend of their beat some attention there, but he's just like an asexual camera imbecile who's just taking pictures for a photo essay, which is fucking weird. So,
okay, I just want to say here, like, this is just like yet another level to Hector's cucked existence. It's like he's inviting a teenager that he like fantasizes about, like his babysitter to his 40th birthday party, so he can have like something at the party that's like for him, right?
Yes.
And then she shows up with some guy And he's like, oh, yeah, you know my friend, right? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure. Sure, another teenager I don't know can be at my birthday party now. Her friend is played by, Lucas Hedges, who went on to be in, like, Manchester by the Sea. And now he's, like, you know, he's pretty big-time young actor.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of those actors you never think about, but if you typed into his name on Twitter, there'd just be a bunch of pictures of him looking like 500 other actors. And the caption would be, Lucas Hedges, I want you to put a Flambergé up my asshole, and would have 100,000 retweets. He's just one of those actors, you know, that people go crazy about that I barely know who he is. So back inside, Hector goes out to grill. Like, he's probably making, I'm going to guess.
Soy. Grilling soy.
Close. I would say Amy's chicken sausages.
Yes.
If I had to guess, knowing what I know about these people.
He's doing like a sort of like a hickory smoked estrogen.
Yeah. And he marinated them in Soylent. But he has some sexual tension at the grill with Connie while Connie's idiot friend takes pictures of him and everything else. So back inside. You
know, I think he also crucially lets Connie drink beer.
Yeah, yeah.
He's letting a 17-year-old get drunk so he can confess his inner sadness to her later.
So I think if this show went on today, like Hector's character, he would he'd be like one of those QAnon guys, like one of those guys that QAnon talks about. They'd be like, sicko Democrat sends pictures of his dick to his 16-year-old and it's Connie. And they'd put him in a graph showing how all Democrats are pedophiles. But so back inside, the gals are talking about gal shit. Uma Thurman's talking about the dick she's catching, but she's also like, I really like him, and you know, it's
I really like him, but like, you know, are we gonna stay serious after he graduates high school? I don't know. Can we maintain a long distance relationship when he goes to college?
He's going to Bard. I don't want to go there. Back inside, Hector's getting his fail gifts. His parents got tickets for everyone there to go to Greece.
That's another example of like her parents coming in, not consulting with anyone, and just like dominating his life and the life of his family, like just on a whim.
Yeah,
we got you all tickets to go to Greece. We see the Parthenon tomorrow. We go. We get on a plane. We go to Greece. Aisha, his wife, is just sort of like, ooh, like, you know, like, here comes the no fun police. Is just, and also, but you know, correctly on her part, the thought of spending, you know, a week in close quarters with
awful
these two Greek people
and all those annoying children and it sounds
terrible children.
Awful.
Yeah, and then Aisha's like sort of like, oh, you know, like, I don't know. This is kind of short notice. I don't know if I can get away from my clinic. You know, we're understaffed as it is. And like, another detail I loved in the show is that like the parents start talking to each other and their son in Greek when they want to just like completely shit on everyone who's
say something
they're
awful.
They're standing right in front of. And then like, his dad just says in Greek to him, he's like, son, in the old country, you must manage your wife. You got
He
was just basically like, son, like, could you tell your wife what to do? This is getting embarrassing for all of us.
Yeah, yeah. So Zachary could just goading them all into going. But everyone just committed to having an annoying argument. Like, Aisha's like, I can't leave. It's not that easy for me to leave the clinic. And the mom is like, just never work and you're going to debt like us.
They're all members of the Syriza party as well. They're like, don't you want to
see Uncle Yanis? Yeah, you go visit Uncle Yanis.
None of these. The only character who could possibly be related to Yanis is Harry. Because they have opposite politics, but like they have a similar alpha vibe. Like Giannis is a big dick player. He's nothing like anyone in this family.
You just look at his like his sort of like intense eyes and like sharp skull and like
That's Giannis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like probably like closely related. Same DNA. So in Hector and Aisha have some annoying ass fucking argument in their bedroom. I thought during this scene it was interesting. Aisha just like pisses with the door open, and I think that was like an allusion to how there's no sexual mystique to their relationship anymore. So we go back to outside. Everyone's being irritating. Quinto goes fucking trad, and he's like, "You should spend time with your family all the time. You have to go on vacation. You must go on the vacation." And then he demands that they turn off the jazz, which is one of the only things that Hector has. It was awesome.
Yeah. I just like a slight digression here. I recently binged straight through the new season of Bosch on Amazon. You know, like,
yeah,
fans of the show will know that I am probably one of the most prominent Bosch fans that there is in this country. It's just the funniest, like Bosch's only affectation outside of being a cop who's just fanatically dedicated to getting justice for like cold cases and putting bad guys behind bars, is that like he just comes home from work into his like sleek Michael Mann like glass cube apartment that like overlooks all of LA from the Hollywood Hills. And then his daughter is there who acts like his wife. And she's like waiting with his slippers, like a pipe and a glass of brandy. And she's like, "Hard day at the office, honey? I've made dinner." And then he's just like, "I just want a fat tire beer and listen to some Thelonious Monk." And he just puts on jazz vinyl records and just, and just sits there broodingly looking out over like the LA nightscape. But there's just something about like being a man of a certain age that has adopted jazz and jazz records as like your kind of thing. Or like the one kind of, I don't know, cultural taste or hobby that you have. What I'm saying is that a jazz guy should probably be locked up. I think they need to go away.
Except for Bosch, but Bosch locks up the sickos, but you know.
No, but there's just something so desperate about it. And with Bosch, like, I love it because it's so funny, but like there's something about the way it's written where they're like, it's kind of a
joke.
He's like, he's not just a cop. He's cool too. And it's just like, I don't know, jazz music wasn't even cool when it was like, even a thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was one of the funniest things in the that was like a recurring joke in the Boondocks, was that the grandpa always just wanted to listen to jazz on the radio. And I thought that was hilarious. But no, it is like, it usually does show like desperation. Like, you're just looking for something. You're like, you're halfway through your life and you're just staring death in the mouth and you're regretting your life. You're thinking of every single choice you made to lead you to this point, being like, if only I did this, if only I did this.
You think of every opportunity that like you missed to get pussy and now you're 40.
Yeah. Oh, brother. So Zachary Quinto Harry gives an amazingly heartfelt toast. Actually, he does show he's the only one in the family with any heart, even though he's trad and an imperialist. Meanwhile, he gives this toast, Noah gets breastfed again. There's a real contrast to different types of people at the party.
There's two full scenes of like a 7-year-old just going to town.
Yeah.
On mommy.
Connie's imbecile friend takes pictures of Hector inside, and Hector jokes to him that he wants to kill himself. weird scene.
He's like, "Yeah, here's a teenager I just met. Like, hey kid, when you're my age, you'll every day when you go to sleep, you'll hope that you just never wake up."
Yeah. Hey, guess what? Nothing to look forward to.
That's what being married and having a family feels like.
Oh man. Hector sets up a game of wiffle ball for the really irritating kids while Zachary Quinto and the newsroom cuck keep having arguments. But again,
another escalation. Hugo runs into him in person full force as soon as he arrives. He destroys precious jazz records. And then he's in their like beautiful brownstone backyard just ripping up flowers from their garden, just like destroying their lawn and just like just causing damage. And they're like, Hugo, be mindful of the flowers.
When
we talked about mindfulness, they're flowers. And he's just like, no. And then also he when he's playing with the other kids, he dominates the tablet. He won't let anyone else play Minecraft. And when they're like, Hugo, let someone else play the Minecraft. And he just like slams it on the table.
He's awful. He's truly awful.
No, and it's just ratcheting up the tension, and then it's just like, I'm just like, oh God, I need a hero. Who will rise?
So our hero and newsroom cook, they're having arguments, and they try to find common ground, and Harry goes, well, we love our kids, and we want them to be happy, right? And newsroom cook goes, Hey, man, our kids aren't even ours. They're long-term house guests. They don't belong. We don't use terms like belonging. And it's like, what the fuck? What? Yeah. That's the most insane shit anyone said at this party. That's fucking ridiculous. Like, what do you mean they're not?
Listen, Jive Turkey, like, my kid's just a roommate I live with. I can't tell him what to do. He has his own life.
That was the most insane thing I've ever, like, it was like, are we supposed to like this character? Because I fucking hate him after that. Like, what do you, fuck are you, it's a roommate that your wife breastfeeds for presumably his entire life.
and you're a painter. Fuck off.
Yeah, go to hell, pal. Hector and Connie flirt under the porch. Uma Thurman sees them. And they're during the game, the wiffle ball game, Hugo's getting made fun of because he can't hit. And Hugo just goes to attack.
Crucially, though, like I said, they're playing wiffle ball, right?
Yeah.
And then for some reason, somebody gives Hugo an actual wooden bat.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, Hugo, you have to use the other bat. No! No.
Oh, and then Hugo has so many transgressions, it's hard to keep track.
And then he just starts like whipping around this wooden baseball bat like fucking like De Niro in The Untouchables, you know? Enthusiasms, you know? A child becomes preeminent, he's expected to when he gets a titty out of his mouth, what is that what gives me pleasure? Baseball. Like, yeah.
I'm now entertaining the argument that Hugo may be kind of an alpha. Like,
he's an agent of chaos that like, but like these people's bloodless lives, like they need something. They need like a chaos agent to shake them out of their stupor. And and Hugo's just like extreme violation of like every like repressed social norm that the quiet desperation with which all these people live their lives and like the resignation and deferring always to others and like never really getting what they want or even asking for what they want. And then Hugo, this little demon child, just comes in and just does whatever he wants instantly, like no filter, throws the records on the ground, screams, puts a titty in his mouth, swings a bat menacingly at other children when they ask him to, like, you know, share. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of the Joker, but Kinto springs to action.
Well, crucially what happens is, they're like, your turn's up, the three strikes and you're out. And he's like, no. And, like, as he gets more agitated, he starts just whipping that bat around more and more. And Harry, Zachary Quinto's son, is the one being like menaced by
the
bat.
Yeah. Kinto's.
Give me the bat, Wendy. Give me the bat.
Kinto springs to action.
Give me the bat.
So before this crucial scene, I want to give you finally my Kinto theory. I think that Kinto is not a Greek. I think he's a Turk. I think that explains everything about his character. Why is he alpha? Why is he not, you know, broke? All these characters are in debt, as is traditional Greek lifestyle. All these characters are ordered around by Germans, as a Greek lifestyle. Kinto is not. Kinto is a baller. Kinto has a Turkish fade. Doesn't have a whole head of hippie hair. He has a Turkish fade. He wears tight pants like a Turk. His wife wears a cocktail dress everywhere like a rich Turk would. He will not stand up. He will stand up to the aggression of a child like a Turk would. He believes in traditional values like a Turk would. He's like the hero of the show. And we know this because he goes up to Hugo, grabs him, and slaps the shit out of him.
He just like he sees his child is in danger, being menaced with a deadly weapon. And then all the other parents are just like, they're like, oh, like, you know, we've been trying to have Hugo practice, you know, calmness. Hugo, no. As he's like swinging a bat at the head of a 9-year-old.
Yes.
And like, okay, Harry sees this. He jumps over like the porch, just like just darts across the lawn.
True athlete.
Just like John Wick, just does like a John Woo barrel, like roll across it.
Yeah,
gets it, up,
amazing.
Grabs this little demon by both arms and shakes him. And it's like, no, you never do that. And then this little bastard just kicks him in the shin
And then Quinto just reels back full force, just mollywops this little brat right across his face. Yeah.
So I wrote here.
This is the moment that made this it worth watching. This is what all this was waiting awesome. For.
And everyone's freaking out, but I want to, my notes here, Zachary Quinto is the hero of the show. He introduced excitement and drama into these people's lives for the first time. What an absolute alpha. Maybe he shouldn't have slapped the kid, but come on. He needs trad discipline, and it's way better than the liberal parenting and breastfeeding he's getting anyway.
What I liked about setting this up is that, like I said, as soon as they introduce Hugo, like the writers and like directors are smart enough to know that like the audience will be going into this with the baseline moral principle that it's never okay for an adult, let alone not the child's parent, to just smack the shit out of a child.
Yeah, no.
But
no.
But they ratchet up the tension in such a way that any viewer deep down inside will be asking themselves, at what point would I hit this child?
No, yeah, absolutely.
Or would you at least, maybe you wouldn't hit the child, but if you saw it happen, something inside you would be like, yeah.
Would you use, if you were in this situation, would you think of Harry, as America thinks of Israel, as a proxy for your desires to take the heat, to hit Hugo? This message is not an approval of Israel. This has not been paid for by AIPAC. So they have a big fight, and Newsroom Cuck acts like he's going to fight Harry. He's not. He's not. But everyone has to be like held back. Yeah, Hugo's awful parents tend to him. They act like he got shot.
No, when Newsroom Cuck is like his version of that is like, he's like, hold me back from my phone, bro, before I call my lawyer.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. You fucked up, pussy. I have Siri. So there's just another awful thing that Hector must defuse standing in between anyone. So after everyone's getting done, after Hector sends Harry and his wife home, Harry, by the way, like his wife acts upset, Harry's wife, but it's like he's going to bang her out in the Range Rover on the way back.
Oh, he's going to.
In front of their kid.
Mega scarring in the rage.
Scarring the kid forever. Like he's
that kid's probably cool with it. This is like showing his child what alphas do. Tell your sons this.
Harry is definitely a tell your sons this guy. He's like probably telling his fucking awful bully kid about Forex trading and selling ebooks online and getting email lists in the manosphere.
He's a dark triad man. He is in the Ivan Thorne forums.
He's absolutely a man of the dark triad.
See, like the dark triad man, Ivan Thorne. Like his like masculinity mentality and coaching is just all about like how to avoid becoming like Hector.
It is. Hector needs to take those manosphere classes.
He really does. Because Hector at his own birthday party, like turning 40, you know, sucks enough as it is. But like he just realizes at this birthday party, like, I don't want to be here. I've been passed over by a promotion. Like no one respects my parents, wife and children. Have no respect for me. I'm pining after a 17-year-old girl. And like I'm basically the saddest man alive.
Yeah. My life. Maybe I wish there was a scene where Harry gave him tickets to an Ivan Throne hate. Or like a seminar, a web seminar. In the manosphere. Yeah. Yeah. He gets sent to some house in Eastern Europe where they lift a barbell and like eat raw steak. But so after that,
Hector is just dying to burst with an arriving woman.
Yeah, yes.
he wants to burst so badly, but he's thinking really about doing it with a babysitter.
Yeah, he's got to stop.
Yeah.
So after this is diffused, Hector goes to tell Connie that they need to stop. I mean, Connie still feels a lot for him, but he's like, we can't do this. This is disgusting. Like we can't do it. I mean, he's probably going to raw this child later in the miniseries, I'm assuming. So, back inside, Aisha bitches about Quinto, despite the fact that, according to Dark Triad psychology, she instantly desires this man. Hector tells her that he didn't get the promotion, and she's like, well, why don't you tell me? We wouldn't have done that birthday party that you didn't want to do. And he just bangs her out in the kitchen.
Yes.
And this is like...
I guess like a happy ending for it, like considering how poorly it could have gone.
Yes, and like, and then the Brian, I think the Bryan Cranston like Barry Lyndon style voiceover narration as he enjoys his the last cigarette he will ever be allowed to have, like staring out over his backyard.
Sad.
Like
very
it's
sad.
Night, it, like it's night at nighttime. Like you know, everyone's gone home. He's just like he's just blasting that cig. This is his like his one kind of like pleasure one in life for himself.
Yeah,
and the voiceover narration is like you know, reflecting back on the day's events. Hector was grateful for the slap because it saved him from like doing the thing that would have, you know, ended his marriage and life. And like it provided like a break, a moment of clarity. And like crucially to get all these annoying fucking people out of his house and just be like, and gave him a kind of a realization that he can't keep flirting with and like, you know,
a child,
yeah, dipping his toe into the pool of statutory rape.
Yes. Well, so, I get, well, you know what, actually, what are your thoughts on this? Because you're not as experienced in the NBC genre as I am, but I did, this is very dissimilar from Council of Dads or This Is Us. This is, like, it's definitely meant for, like, a tonier audience. So what did you think about this?
You know, like, it's silly, and, like, I hated every character in it, but it was not as excruciatingly bad or grating as I expected it to be.
Same,
like,
yeah.
Like it was not like I was expecting it to be like an atrocity, but like there's a certain something there, like the, you know, it's got a very good cast. I think the
great woman cast.
The woman who directed the pilot, Lisa Cholodenko, is someone who has like she did like Laurel Canyon and High Art.
Oh
like,
wow,
she has some like indie cred, you know, like she's got a pedigree. Like
it's well directed. Okay, so. I will just restate this for the audience. I talked about it in the last episode. So I figured out that there are two main types of network dramas, right? There's This Is Us and Council of Dads. Like that type of show, it's very clear what the message is, who it's for. That's for like middle class, lower middle class people. It's for Ellen viewers. It's for people who are living bad, fraught lives where like just any hospital visit can bankrupt them. And the message of those shows is, as I figured out, hey, you pieces of shit, you have your family and friends, right? Stop fucking complaining. look at all the terrible shit these characters go through. Don't you love it? Don't you love it? Don't you feel sad? Fuck you. Fuck you. You want me, Ken Olin, to pay more taxes? Suck my fucking dick, you little cunt. Fuck you. And then there's the shows for like a more upper middle class or Striver audience. And that's this, mm-hmm. And it's this, and it's A Million Little Things. And I think these shows are interesting because they're always about.
It's like a slightly higher pedigree. And like, this is more in the vein of like the genre of shows that have like proliferated now, like the HBO Big Little Lies. And now this Million Little Fires fucking show, like they're based on like novels. This is an adaptation of an Australian TV show that was based on a novel. It takes place in a milieu of the quiet lies and like, you know, sort of surface, like beneath the surface of people's like very rich, like nice lives.
Yeah.
They'll have very good jobs. They live in a beautiful house, like they, you know, like perfect family, but like, you know, like they have their own agonies and miseries as well.
Absolutely. And I think like the message of A Million Little Things, that was like, hey, your lives aren't boring and useless. Like you have drama. You can have drama and excitement in your life and friction. And I think with this one, it's more like A Million Little Pieces is insane.
I don't know. What is that one? Is that the James Frey like drug addiction book?
No. It's about A Million Little Pieces is about like a group of friends who like their world is torn apart by their best friend, Ron Livingston, committing suicide, and it causes them to like open up about issues and problems they have in their life, and everyone in the show makes $7 million a year. This show it's more for like upper middle class people, and it's like, you think your life is boring and shitty and you regret everything and you just do so much you don't want to do. But that in and of itself is its own hero's journey. So I think I definitely wouldn't watch it if it wasn't for the series. But I would say it's probably like the best thing that I've watched for it. It's like very well competently directed. Great cast, as you alluded to. And it's like, I will say this. Like, all the problems in it are very realistic. It's like, yeah, you have a bunch of people over you don't want to have over. It's very realistic to, like, the upper middle class lifestyle of just having a bunch of friends and family who you fucking hate and doing things you don't want to do. The no one, like, gets cancer and dies. I mean, I shouldn't speak too soon.
I mean, but, like, but the hook of it is, on the surface, the most ludicrous of all these shows. It's like, that, what would happen if an annoying child just got, like, fucking decked in front of your backyard?
But that's, like, that's more realistic than any of these other shows. It's a more realistic outcome that they would have, like, this more conservative member of the family who does that. Like, I've, like, not exactly that, but there are things like that that I saw happen growing up, where, like, there was a type of, like, culture war tension and shit. Like, this is probably the highest, like, this is the best thing we'll watch for this series, I think. Like, there's a reason this episode is running shorter than the other ones, because, like, This Is Us and Council of Dads, they have just so much, there's so much going on. Everyone has cancer. Everyone is dying. Everyone, like, there's always a huge life and death struggle.
When you tried to explain to me, like what the actual plot of This Is Us was, and, when you explained to me, like, who Sterling K. Brown's character was in relation to everyone else, I was like, I still don't get it. It, like, he was, like, a baby left at a fire station who was adopted by a Vietnam vet, and, like, now he's, like, in his family or something. It's just like, what? And, like, the show takes place on, like, two different timelines, and, like, I'm still baffled by it.
It's a baffling show. It's a baffling show, but this one, it's a lot less to figure out. I really appreciated the slap for just being, like, sort of boring, mediocre TV, and not just, like, insane and insulting and infuriating. Like, again, no, it's like,
honestly, like, there was, I, like, watching this, like, you know, 40, 42 minutes or whatever, like, I did not, like my body and mind did not, like, viscerally rebel against it. I just sort of, like, you know, like, I watched it and I was like, you know, like, this is nothing I would ever, like, seek out on my own. Like, all I knew about it was, like, you know, the slap, the hook, and just, like, I just want to see a gif of the Dark Triad man in, like, using martial discipline and physical corporal punishment on a rowdy breastfeeding child, and I want to see it slowed down. And, like, I would like to see a version of this show, except it stars and is written by, like, every black stand-up comic from the 90s, and the show is 3 minutes long.
yes. So, I think next time you come back, Will, I'm going to have you watch This Is Us, because I want to show you the contrast between that and this. This is the show, by the way. This is the show that I got more requests to do than anything, and I knew it wouldn't measure up to what I'd already watched. But for everyone out there who asked, we did it, and it was the best show that I've watched for this series. Again, nothing I would watch in my own time, but, you know, hey, that's life. Will, thank you so much.
A pleasure. I definitely want to come back, and I want to see an episode of This Is Us and Council.
No, we're going to.
I need to know what these shows are like. I need to know what they're about.
No, yeah, we will do that. We will do that soon. Will, do you have anything to plug?
Nope. I do have a plug. Season 6 of Bosch on Amazon.
It is
the goofiest season of Bosch yet. I'm just going to let you know that it begins with a plot line about sovereign citizen terrorists who steal radioactive material from a hospital and are going to, like, seemingly set up, like, that they're going to build a dirty bomb to blow up a federal courthouse.
Bosch fucking owns.
Yeah, and then there's also a stab at addressing Los Angeles homelessness crisis.
Wow.
And the chief of police, played by Lance Reddick, is, like, running for mayor, and he's like, they're like, there's one scene where they're like, he's like, I'm announcing a new rollout for my homeless strategy, and, like, one of the cops are like, is just like, well, you know, like homelessness is, like, it's like a interlocking set of, like, crises in, like, the housing market and, like, mental illness treatment. And, like, I don't know if we can really deal with it. And he's just like, we're dealing with all of it. We're taking the war to the homeless. And, like, this whole thing is just like, we're going to use compassionate policing
to like, you know, to just like target with like with LAPD SWAT, like the troublemakers, the drug dealers, the violent people in the homeless camp, the tent encampments. And then we're going to bulldoze them. it is so funny. I mean, this is the goofiest season of Bosch yet. If you're not into Bosch, just started season one.
Bosch on. Like, I'm in season two right now.
His relationship with his daughter is even weirder on this season than it's ever fucking been.
I gotta catch up.
Like his daughter on this show is his wife, mother, and daughter at the same time. And it is
that's
like,
trad.
It's very weird. It's a lot of psychology going on. And he loves jazz music. That's all you need to know about Bosch. And, you know, like, he always gets his man.
He always gets him. Bosch is
I mean, when I just, I see, because I took a break because Catherine and I are doing a, we're going through Justified. She's never seen it. We're on season four.
Oh, Catherine, she's so lucky.
It's the fucking best show. It's like,
it really is.
It's a show that, like, on its surface, it's like, it delivers. It's like, it's not too smart, but it's so much better than it has any right to be. Like,
it's an insanely good show. You know what my, like, it has, it's not too smart, but it doesn't try to be that smart. Like, all the humor in Justified, I think, is incredibly funny on purpose.
It's very funny. The writing's very good. And obviously, like, the performances of, like, you know, like, Walton Goggins, Boyd Crowder is, like, just the god. He's the best criminal of all time. We just watched the episode where, like, he pulls the fucking rug out from under, like, the rich Clover Hill guys. And he's like, now what you've done and how you made your fortune may make you criminals, but it don't make you outlaws. I am the outlaw. And this is my world.
Yes.
Fucking so good. Sit your white collar ass down. And then the sex party. Oh, God. Wonderful. But in, like, watching these two shows, like, very, like, close to each other, I was struck by the contrast between Detective Harry Bosch and U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens. It's like the virgin Harry Bosch. Like, all he does,
he's great,
like,
at his job.
He's really good at his job. Like, he's obsessed with being a cop, like, staying, like, extra hours just looking at paperwork, following up every fucking lead. He calls everyone he works with brother. He's like, thanks, brother. Thanks for that. He wears a divorce guy bracelet and drinks one beer a week. The Chad Raylan Givens, terrible at his job.
One of the worst at what his job is supposed to be.
Like, one of the worst law enforcement, one of the, like, worst people to ever carry a badge is the only thing he's good at about being a cop is understanding criminals, because he basically is one, and engineering situations in which he gets to murder people.
He's
like,
I was thinking about
the pilot of Justified begins where he gets, like, kicked out of the Miami office because he just shoots a guy in public in broad daylight. Like, he just blows him away. Like,
fucking just fucking murks him in a crowded restaurant.
Just smokes this dude, like, with, like, the barest pretense that, like, oh, my life was in danger. And they're like, okay, well, we can't have you here. You're going back to Kentucky. And then, like, after that, on every episode, he kills someone, like, every other episode. In a similar fashion. They're like, well,
I would say,
you're in Kentucky. That's just the way it is.
Raylan clocks about 20 bodies a season, at least.
Raylan has a body count that's like Corona level by season four. It's just like, he is a one man, like he's like a plague.
What a great show. It's such a funny show.
He has put more lead into people than, like, the Roman plumbing system.
Yes. And by the way, the gunplay in the show is, like, it's way better than any TV, like, cop procedural gunplay has any right to be. The way that it's structured, like, I love that Justified follows, like, the bad guy of the week thing.
Yeah,
like, it's the only perfect mix of
case of the week and then, like, overarching arc.
Season plot,
and they do, like, a really, really good, because, like, shows that are just all one plot can get a little tiresome, like it sputters out, and then shows that are only case of the week, it's like there's not much investment in it, they're sort of disposable, but, like, Justified has, like, the perfect mix of, like, the overarching plot and, like, the bad guy of the week.
Yeah. No, what a great show. Yeah, everyone watched Justified, too.
Wonderful, but, like, Raylan Givens is, like, the most Chad cop ever.
He's terrible at his job.
He's really bad at his job and is also really rude to all his coworkers and, like, lazy. And, like, half of the things he does on the show is just him freelancing with a U.S. Marshals badge for like personal shit that he has no jurisdiction or authority to do.
Yeah,
let alone kill someone over.
He never does the marshal job of like making sure witnesses get places. He's just killing people.
Exactly. They're like Bosch is like, I'm staying an extra 6 hours today to look at paperwork to solve a cold case that's been closed for 20 years. And like unjustified, like, or it's just like, Raylan, like your dad shot a state trooper. Can you maybe go down there and your dad's involved in it. Could you look into this? And he's like, all right. First, I got to settle a gambling debt for my ex-wife. And I'm drunk right now.
So. They punish. When Raylan gets punished by Art, it's like, no, you literally just have to do the job you signed up for. You have to like escort a witness. And Raylan, whenever they said Raylan to do this, Raylan always finds a way to kill three guys while somehow.
Yeah. I just saw one like in season four where it's like a Detroit hitman has been sent there to like, you know, like kill who they think Drew Thompson is and then kill Boyd. And like Raylan shows up at Boyd's bar when like the hitman dressed as a state trooper is like arresting Boyd and like he's impersonating a cop and he's going to go like kill Boyd. And then like Raylan just within 30 seconds of talking to and interacting with this guy who's like, okay, got to leave now. He's under arrest. Could you not, you know, interfere? Raylan just susses it out and then just like draws and plugs him in the chest with like on site. And then he was like, man, I hope I was right about that. And they're like, yeah. Art's like, well, Raylan, turns out you're not a cop killer. But it's just like, the guy doesn't even draw on him. He just, he just smirks and then like Raylan just plugs him dead in the chest.
Yeah,
puts him down like without decimated. Any warning. Like, and he's just
decimated. Yep,
I had a gut feeling about it, you know. So yeah, watch Justified and Bosch, and check out The Slap if you want to. It's, you know, it's worth it to see that little kid get slapped. That's basically
absolutely.
It's basically my take on it.
All right, Will, thank you so much. We will see you again on This Is Us to. I don't know, Council. I think I have to make Lucy the official Council of Dads correspondent, but we can definitely do This Is Us.
All right. I'll see This Is Us, definitely. I need to see this show.
Yeah, no, you have to. All right.
Okay. Always a pleasure.
Always. I will talk to you tomorrow.
Cheers.